So I want to start from some historical things from which this activity appeared. Again, this is relationships. Between Seeburg, Witten, theory, or n equal to super young Mills, and integrable, thank you, systems. In 1994, Seeburg and Witten proposed a solution to confining supersymmetric theory. So, in the simplest example, let's take SUN n equal to super young Mills in 4D. And this is the theory, you can write down action. So basically, in its basic version, it contains one n equal to vector supermultiplet, which contains vector field, two Weyl fermions and one complex scalar field. If you're using n equal one notations, you can combine these two and these two into n equal one supermultiplet, and you have a Lagrangian, which is 1 over 4 pi. So it's not that important for now. I mean, it's just motivational part, but just to be right on everything. So all the fields are in a joint representation of gauge group SUN, and this is a confining theory. So it contains non-abelian gauge group. So when you try to compute a running coupling constant, so let's put here. And coupling constant is encoded in tau, which is complexified coupling constant, which plays a pretty important role in this story. Like this. So when you try to compute a normalization group flow, if you're interested in a low energy degrees of freedom in this theory, your coupling constant, it grows. Gauge field is coupled to scalar fields. So there is this scalar field has a potential. So at some scale, Higgs mechanism happens. So potential, if you expand everything not in a super field, but in a normal field. So this is a field strength for vector field, which is vector super field, and these are scalar super fields. And if you write down potential for scalars, it goes like this, square. Trace of mutator 5 phi dagger squared. When you have a potential for scalar field, so when you're going to lower energy, at some point you have spontaneous symmetry breaking, and classical vacuums of this theory are parameterized by this, and modular gauge transformations, in fact, you can consider vacuums to be parameterized by diagonal matrices. When spontaneous symmetry breaking happens, in fact, your symmetry is broken completely until you reach U1 theory. So in fact, when symmetry breaking happens, instead of this non-abelian theory, you're coming to some number n minus one, theory of n minus one U1 vector multiplets. So here V is SUN.
So are you deforming the theory or not?
Sorry?
Is it undeformed in equals 2?
Yes.
What if it's confining?
I mean, because you have non-abelian, you have non-abelian vector field, and if you like compute your running coupling constant.
That's not a criterion for confining.
No, I mean, like potentially confining. I'm not saying that.
Not confining.
But I mean, okay. Can I say asymptotically free?
Yes, you can.
Okay, sorry. Maybe I'm using the wrong one. Yes, sorry. Yeah, this is asymptotically free theory. Yes. And when your coupling constant it runs, at some point, like spontaneous symmetry breaking happens, and like your gauge group it like breaks down to U1 to n minus one. So you have n minus 1, n equal to vector fields, and this theory is not asymptotically free any longer. It's like zero charge theory, so your coupling constant effectively is not running. So at some point, which is called lambda in this science, like your coupling constant freezes, and you can consider like you have some not strongly interacting theory of vector fields, of U1 vector fields. And like you can like since you have restrictions from supersymmetry, you can like restrict your action for this like low energy theory. So this is Lagrangian, and I can also write down Lagrangian here. So this is like low energy. And in fact, you can restrict your low energy action to be of this form with some unknown function f, which is holomorphic function of ai. Ai are U1 chiral n equal 1. So the task which Seiberg and Witten were trying to address, they were trying to find a form of this like single function which determines completely low energy physics in terms of like high energy UV scale parameters, which are tau, and also like these parameters A1, AN, which like determine your like how spontaneous symmetry breaking happens. So the point on Coulomb branch of this theory. So these are, or maybe it's better to call them not A but U. These are Coulomb branch parameters. Like so understand. Physics of low energy theory in terms of high energy parameters. And in fact, like using some considerations, which I'm not going to like describe in details now, they reformulated this problem as some mathematical problem for auxiliary complex curve, which is called Seiberg-Witten curve.
Excuse me, what is the relation between tau and Leibniz coupling?
So it's written here.
Sorry. Okay.
So it's like complexification of it's convenient in this science to complexify adding theta angel to like to your complexified coupling constant.
Okay. At this point, where you say the coupling constant freeze, the theory is conformal.
No, I mean it's no, like it's not flowing. So if you go to to IR. In theory, which is U1 theory, U1 gauge theory, your coupling constant is not growing any longer.
It's constant. changing the scale is constant, but this means that beta function is zero, and usually it means that you have a scale invariance.
I can't say so. There are massless fields in this sector. So your gauge, for example, like these scalar fields are massless, but you also have some massive degrees of freedom, which are not non-perturbative, which are not visible in this section. Yes. So it's no, it's not conformal, I guess. So they're formulated this problem in a following way. And now, like, I'm going to talk about this U2 case where, like, phi is U0 minus U, like, which is like parameter U and is a single parameter on Coulomb branch. And in this case, like, they claim where that, like, there is an equation. Like, you can reformulate problem of finding f as a problem of solving some equation which is like of this form, and I'm going to like to explain what are all these letters. So it's like f depends on single variable a in this case, and so you have single scalar field in a lower energy theory, and like a in this case is like integral of some differential over cycle on some complex curve, and a dual is integral of the same differential over some different cycle, and differential ds it's equal to z d lambda over lambda, and the complex curve on which we compute these differentials it's given by equation lambda plus, sorry for maybe confusing notations, yeah, so in the case of like in this case polynomial w, so p in SU2 case it's w square minus u, where u is this parameter which parameterizes Coulomb branch. So, yeah. So you have two parametric family of complex curves. One parameter is parameter parameterizing your Coulomb branch, and another parameter it determines the scale. Sorry, it determines the scale where you like your theory becomes zero charge theory, and where your Compli constant is not flowing any longer. Yeah, so Varian parameters, lambda and u, we are Varian family of curves, and like we are getting some different functions f. So implicitly, this function f, it depends on this parameter u and parameter lambda. So in case of SU2, this curve is of genus 1, so it can be pictorially represented something like this. So it's two sheet branching cover over like over W plane. Sorry. Yeah, and two cycles over which we compute these integrals are like this cycle. Oh, maybe I can use color chalk. So this is a cycle, and we also have a B cycle which goes like this. Goes from one sheet to another. So I mean, if I want to like compute some expansion of this function f in terms of u and lambda, so what I have to do, like I have to compute these periods. So I can compute them as a series, for example, in variable u. Then, like, I have two series, and I can like write this equation in a form df over du equal to a dual da over du. And then, like, if I have expansion of these two functions as a functions of u, I can just integrate like right hand side and obtain expansion for f as a function of u. So this was the solution of Sever-Witten, and this is like some non-trivial and very interesting example when you can like compute your effective action for low energy theory completely in terms of the data of high energy theory. Okay, are there any questions at this point?
So you found a solution of f in terms of u, but it also depends on capital lambda.
Sorry?
The function f also depends on the capital lambda.
Right, yes, absolutely.
But with this equation, you found a solution in terms of u.
No, it also depends. Sorry, maybe I had to emphasize this additionally, but it would also depend on lambda.
Okay.
So the expansion, yeah, thank you for this question. It's a good question. So the expansion of this function, so like you can compute expansion of this function, and the form of this series, it's of this form, I over 2 pi a square, or maybe it's better to use this a square logarithm of a square over lambda square plus some So it has an expansion of this form, and these coefficients fk, they depend on u. But like the structure of this series, it goes over expansion a over lambda, and this part it's called typically one loop, because it corresponds to like one loop beta function. So if you compute like your effective action in one loop, you will get this part. And this part, it's called typically instantonic. Because it goes in degrees of lambda, and lambda is related to like coupling constant. I might write down this expression in a wrong way, but it's like maybe 4 pi over g squared. So the expansion, or maybe minus, or maybe some, maybe 8 pi. This I'm not sure about. Sorry. But the important thing is that this part, it goes in expansion over instantonic parameter, so it's non-perturbative in coupling constant. This part is non-perturbative correction to your prepotential. F is called prepotential. Yeah, and in fact, limit like from the point of view of complex geometry of this curve, limit when your lambda it goes to zero, where a goes in infinity, like it corresponds to like to case from one side when all these corrections are vanishing, and when instantonic corrections are not that important, it's called perturbative limit, because only one loop part is essential. And from the point of view of complex curve, it corresponds to the limit when like these handles, they are shrinking, and your genus one curve, it degenerates into like pair of genus zero curves, which are like, connected by some small tubes. Yeah.
What about when A is equal to lambda, and it's the opposite?
Opposite limit.
Right. So what would this also have the meaning this time? When the perturbative part goes to zero.
You mean when a goes to zero?
When a goes to lambda.
Yeah. A goes to lambda. Good question. Yeah, I can't say. I mean, in this limit, the whole instanton part, it's very essential. So like maybe this some like strongly interaction regime, and it's natural that like one loop part is not that important now when you have lots of fluctuations around instantons, like one loop computation, it does not provide your like essential information.
But you know, this is a theory, right? K goes to infinity.
Yes.
Question, but what is the radius of convergence?
This is a good question. So this theory has phase diagram, and it's convenient to describe this phase diagram in terms of parameter U, like which is a Coulomb branch parameter. And if you go to like to some papers, you find the following picture. So you have this U plane, and you have in the center, so you have domain which has elliptic shape, and this corresponds to U equal to 1, and this corresponds to U equal to minus 1. And the domain outside of this, like the external domain, it's called weakly interacting domain. And why it's weakly interacting? Because it means that U Coulomb parameter, it's large enough, it's large. So the spontaneous symmetry breaking, it happened early. Then your coupling constant, it didn't manage to flow too much. So it was still small. And this means that in low energy theory, like you're not that much coupled, and you are staying in a weakly interacting regime. And this expansion, it corresponds to this external domain where your theory is not too much strongly interacting. But you have also internal, which is like a strongly interacting domain. And in this case, yes, you have different degrees of freedom. And what is more important, I'm not going to talk much about this, but you have also some special BPS states. And your spectrum of BPS states, it's different in this internal domain and in an external domain. So in internal domain, your BPS states is like you have only two ones. You have only magnetic monopole and ion. And in an external domain, you have W boson and like some tower, infinite time tower of ions. So this is a phase space, but it's not convenient. Like it's convenient not to write it in terms of A, but in terms of U. Okay. This was the most physical part of my talk. I will go to more to integrable systems. And this is what I maybe know a little bit better. Soon after this solution of Seyberg and Witten for gauge theory was found, some people, different groups in different places, they observed that the same families of curves with the same differential, so these curves with these differentials and these variables A and A dual, they appear in integrable systems. Yeah. So, what are integrable systems? In the simplest possible explanation, it's when you have some phase space which is R to 2D, where D is a dimension, and you have some variables Qi and Pj, which has some Poisson bracket, and you have some Hamiltonians H alpha, which depend on these variables P and Q. On the whole set of variables, and the system is integrable by Liouville integrability when you have d Hamiltonians or some sometimes they are called Hamiltonians, sometimes they are just called conserved quantities, and these Hamiltonians are in involution, so they have zero Poisson bracket. Then when you have like D on a 2D dimensional phase space, you have D Hamiltonians in involution, you can construct, like you can completely solve this system. Like this is standard stuff from 19th century. So you have Liouville integrability. Or maybe you can know this under the name action angle variables. Like, who maybe I don't know if it's usual here to ask questions to audience. So who knows, like, about Liouville integrability or about integrability, like in these terms, integrability in classical integrable systems. Like maybe you heard something. Okay, yeah. Okay, maybe. I cannot. Unfortunately, I cannot go deeper into this. But like you, like I would be happy to explain like to everyone after this seminar, like if you're interested. And like one of the basic examples of Todd chains, which was known like in 19th century, I guess, of integrable systems, is Todd chain. So yeah, and like to prove integrability of this system, so to prove that you have enough Hamiltonians and these Hamiltonians are in involution, people are used to some additional device which is called Lux matrix. So this is just some auxiliary matrix depending on parameter z. And these matrices, they have like few peculiar properties. So one important property is that if you take two matrices and you compute like element twice Poisson bracket of these matrices, so people typically are using this kind of notation. So this notation means that you are taking tensor product and of these two matrices, and like and you take like you construct a matrix which lives in a tensor product of these two spaces, and each element of this tensor product is a Poisson bracket of matrix elements of this matrix. So this thing, it's equal to like it's equal to some commutator. And this is called classical Young-Baxter equation.
That's the Young-Baxter equation should be the equation solved by R, right?
Yeah, I know, yes. So classical, maybe it's better not called Young-Baxter, but RLL equation. Sorry. Yeah, thank you. Yes, you're right. Yes, it's classical RLL equation. This is important because from this equation follows the following property. If you take several matrices depending on different coordinates and momentums, and you multiply them, so you construct like T, which is L1 of Z, L2 of Z, and so on, Ln of Z. So if you take a product of these matrices, the same property holds. This is a simple exercise. You can check if you want. And what is even more important, what follows from this equation, that if you have T of Z which satisfies this equation, you can take trace of this matrix, and for traces, T of Z1 trace T of Z2, it's equal to zero. Like, and this simply follows from taking trace of this equation for Poisson brackets. So if you take trace on the right-hand side, you take trace of commutator, which is vanishing always, and on the left-hand side, you are getting like traces of these matrices, or of products of these matrices if you multiply them. And why this is good? Because like now if you expand this like both like these expressions in terms of Z1 and Z2, you are getting expressions like this. So sum over AB, Z1 to A, Z2 to B, and then Poisson bracket of sum TA TB. If your expansion of capital T in like trace of capital T in terms of small in Z is Z to the A TA. So like what it proves that this T it generates you some conserved quantities in involution. So some quantities which are depending on P and Q and which have zero Poisson bracket, vanishing Poisson bracket. So in fact, if you have any solution of this equation, any solution of this equation, it provides you with some integrable system. And in this case, like we can consider the simplest example when n equal 2. So when you multiply just two matrices, L1 and L2, and you set like Q1 equal to Q2 equal to minus Q1 equal to Q, and P2 is equal to minus P1 equals to P, like trace of, in this case, trace of L1 of Z, L2 of Z, times like some additional matrix, which I'm not going to explain too much about, like just diagonal matrix. It's equal to P square plus, sorry, it's equal to H. I'm sorry for messy presentation. And this H, it's equal to Z square minus H. And this H, it's equal to P square plus E to the Q plus lambda E to the minus Q. Yeah, so, and this is a Hamiltonian of so-called Toda system. Yeah, and this system can be easily generalized to larger n. In that case, you will receive like system of n interacting particles. So how can you think about this? This is like just one particle with momentum p. And in confining potential, e to the q plus lambda e to the minus q. And if you take like n larger, so you multiply more matrices, you're receiving like system of n interacting particle. And like I made this restriction to just set center of mass to zero of this system. So this is the simplest example. And in this case, you have only like you have only one two-dimensional phase space. So for integrability, you need only one Hamiltonian. But why this is related to previous story about Seiberg-Witten theory?
So
it's
what is capital lambda in this context?
Huh?
What is capital lambda in this context? I haven't seen
it. Yes, thank you for the question. So it will be the same capital lambda which will be here, but in this context it's called twist. So in fact, if you have Lux operators, you can also multiply them by some diagonal matrix and it will not break integrability. So it's just another parameter.
Corresponding to what?
I mean, corresponding to potential, like or to interaction of your particles. Like in this setting, it's just like that. But it's you cannot remove it. I mean, it's under, there are some parameters in this story which you can remove. But this parameter, it's essential. You cannot remove it. Thank you. This is a good question. Yeah. So why this is related to what we discussed before? Because it's convenient not to consider only trace of operator, but instead to write down spectral problem for this operator. So it's like very convenient in this science to consider like curve, which is defined by this equation. And what is this curve in this case? So since, since T is 2 by 2 matrix, we can easily compute this determinant. And this is like eigenvalue problems, like eigenvalues problems. Yes, so L is eigenvalue, like solutions of this equation, they are given eigenvalues for T, which are lambda as a function of Z. And in this case, we can like write down this explicitly. So it's lambda squared minus L minus lambda times trace T of Z plus determinant of T of Z. And trace T of Z we already seen it there. So it's generating function of Hamiltonians of the system. We call this like as a T of Z or like P of Z, doesn't matter. Let's call it P of Z. And determinant of T of Z, matrices, L matrices, they have determinant equal to actually to one. We also need, I forgot to put a minus sign here. Yeah, and we also have the twist. So determinant is basically equal to lambda. And we can divide this equation by lambda, by small lambda, and we get equation of the curve in a form, in this form, which is the same equation which we had here. So, and I guess that was initial observation which motivated people like to consider this correspondence. Also these variables A and A dual, it appears that they play an important role. So you have to compute A variables like this A, which are integrals over, not to miss notations, W d lambda over lambda, over AI, over A cycles. And if you know what is separation of variables and what is Liouville integrability, you can recognize in this, this is not obvious, but it can be shown that these are action variables. Of integrable system. However, at this point, like angle variables and dual variables and prepotential, it do not have any obvious interpretation in integrable systems. However, like already, like you can see some similarities between one and second story.
The number of particles in the integrable system is equal to the group, to the gauge group.
Right. N there is the same N. Yeah, right. Like the dimension of Coulomb branch corresponds to number of Hamiltonians. Okay, any questions on this story? Okay, I'm not sure about time. Okay, I have 20 minutes remaining. Good. So I'm going to be brief now, maybe more brief. There is a 5D. So now I want to approach cluster integrable systems, and to approach them, I need to tell about 5D story. So there is a theory called N equal 1, 5D, super Young Mills. And I cannot say much about physics of this theory, unfortunately. And I'm not even sure how well defined is this theory. Because in 5D, you do not have normal or normalizable quantum field theories, UV completely normalizable quantum field theories. So people are still, as far as I understand, I'm not an expert, but as far as I understand, people are still arguing if this is a UV finite theory or it has only string completion, or we can define it in some complete way. This I cannot say, unfortunately. But people, you can try to provide this Seyberg-Witten kind description for this theory, to try to some extend this description to this theory. And it appears that you can do this. And initially this theory was studied by Seyberg, and correspondence with integrable systems were provided by Nikita Nekrasov. And it appears that in fact, you only need to fix several minor things. So you still have curve, which is here, I hope I will be not wrong. So you still have curve of this type, but now you have different differential. So your differential is now like log of mu d lambda over lambda. And your like corresponding integrable system in this case, this is not a TODA chain, but so-called relativistic TODA. And this relativistic TODA system, it so it's similar to that one. So you have Lux operator also, like, and your Lux operator, it depends on mu, and it's like square root of mu e to the pi plus 1 over square root of mu e to the minus pi here. So it's similar to that Lux operator, and you have some R matrix which is different, which differs from that R matrix. And you also have this classical RLL equation, and in this case, like Hamiltonian of the system, it's like it's a little bit weird when you see it for the first time. In this case, people used to call coupling constant as Z. I don't know why. Yeah, so you have similar system, but like you replaced your pi square by 2 hyperbolic cosine of pi. And in some sense, like if you go to small momentums, like you obtain your initial Hamiltonian, but when you are going to large momentums, it has a different behavior. And also a quantization of the system is pretty different from the from non-relativistic one. And relativistic, it's called relativistic because you have like exponentiated momentum, and it's convenient sometimes to parameterize your, like if you consider relativistic particle, and if you go to rapidities, you will also have some like exponentiated variables in a Hamiltonian. This is a corresponding, and it's, yeah, I should write it. Relativistic TODA chain. Okay. I wanted to tell more, but maybe I should try to be shorter. So where are cluster algebras, and what are cluster algebras in this context? There is a notion of X cluster variety, which is just some class of varieties with a nice structure on them, nice Poisson varieties. So you have Poisson bracket, you have some variables, xi. So typically these varieties are glued from charts, and each char is C star to some degree, d. So you have d variables on these charts, xi and xj, and they have a simple Poisson bracket, xi times Poisson bracket with xj is equal to epsilon ij times xi xj. And this epsilon is some matrix. So this matrix is integral valued in our cases. And it's convenient to represent these matrices using some quivers. So the running example, which will be convenient for me. And it's like that. And actually, this is example. This is a quiver corresponding to this integrable system, and I will explain in a second why does it correspond to that system.
So C star is the C minor without the zero functions.
C star is you have charts, and on these charts you have some Poisson bracket. Like you have variables, and these variables satisfy some Poisson bracket.
What is C star?
Yes. So C star is C without zero. So your variables are not allowed to like to be zero because you want to invert your variables, and if you have zero, it's not good.
And do you impose any symplectic non-degeneracy condition on this Poisson bracket? Or?
No, it can be degenerate. And in this case, it's degenerate. So, yeah. So now, I want to explain what this, how to work with this quiver. So it just encodes matrix elements of this epsilon ij. So epsilon ij is basically adjacent symmetrics for this quiver. So, for example, in this, like, you can from this quiver you can read that Poisson bracket of x1 and x2, for example, it's equal to minus two times x1 x2. And minus two because you have double arrow here. It's as simple as this. Yeah, and cluster integrable systems are systems which have like good like which have cluster structure of this X cluster variety on their phase space. But if you want to have some variety, you like one chart is not enough. You need more. Like you need some other charts, and you need gluing function between these charts. And in case of cluster integrable, like in case of X cluster variety, like you have some specific gluing condition between the charts. So like charts are related by so-called mutations. So you have some map, you have one CD, and you have another CD, and you have mutation map, which is mu I, which is called mu I. And I, sorry, I would call it mu j. And this mu j is some mapping, and you can perform a mutation in a direction of some variables. It's called mutation in a direction of variables. So you have x1, x2, x3, and x4, and you can do mutation in direction of any of these variables. And you have transformation rule for your variables. So xj goes to 1 over xj, and xi goes to xi times 1 plus xj signum epsilon ij epsilon ij. It's not a simple rule. I mean, it's some rational transformation. So you have some birational, and it birational. The inverse transformation is also a rational transformation. And it transforms variables. But what is important that if you call this variable to be x j prime and this variable to be called x I prime, and by I mean all variables which are not equal to j, where j is a direction of mutation. Like your transformation rule, it's consistent to Poisson structure on another chart, which also has this form, but with primes, x I prime, x j prime, equal to epsilon a j prime, x I prime, x j prime. And like for epsilon ij prime, it's adjacent symmetrics. It's also integral matrix, which can be also encoded by quiver, but some different transformed quiver. And there is a simple rule. So epsilon ik is equal to epsilon ik plus epsilon ij divided by 2. Yeah, so you have some charts, and these charts are glued by special maps. And these maps have different quivers. So in some sense, we can think that maps charts are labeled by quivers. So for example, if you perform mutation in a direction of x1, so if we perform M1, this quiver would transform to like similar one, but different. So this arrow stays the same. And here we will get like four arrows here. And these arrows will invert their direction, just as an example. So, and this invitation in direction of one. And also variables would transform in some way. Okay, And I claim that this, like the whole family of Todd chains, so no matter how many Lux matrices we would multiply, the whole family of these Todd chains, it has a cluster algebraic nature. Cluster algebraic means that, like a cluster integrable system. Is a system where Hamiltonians are dependent on cluster variables. So you can, on this phase space, you can construct some Hamiltonians which coincide with Hamiltonians of Todd chain and which transforms in a nice way. I'm not going to explain what does it mean, but they are transformed. So like in many cases, they are invariant under the action of this mutation. So they are a good expressions on all the charts, on all cluster charts. Okay, and now like maybe the last thing, and yes, definitely. The last thing which I'm going to tell, like very briefly, so how do we get these Hamiltonians? Maybe I can erase this. To construct these Hamiltonians, one needs like some auxiliary device, which is called bipartite graph on the torus. So this is just graph whose vertices are labeled by black and white colors, and black vertices are connected only to white vertices, and white vertices are connected only to black vertices. And you have discrete to one connection on this graph. This means that you just assign to each edge, you assign some kind of U1 parallel transport or some weight. So here you have eight edges and you have eight corresponding like parallel U1 parallel transport from one vertex to another. And you also have a discrete Dirac Castellain, it's called operator. And this operator is basically just like almost adjacency matrix, like weighted adjacency matrix for this graph. So in this case, like I can write it down. So in this case, it's just, maybe I had to do this in this way, just for good notations. So here we have W1, W2, W4, W3, and here we have 5, 6, 7, 8. And this matrix in this case, it's just the adjacency matrix of this graph, twisted by some weights mu and lambda. And mu and lambda are corresponding to edges which cross the A and B cycles on this torus. So this picture is drawn on torus on T2. So left hand side is glued to right hand side, and bottom is glued to top. Yeah, and the claim of cluster integrable systems, Gonchiarov-Kenyon approach to cluster integrable systems, is that determinant of this operator, it's a spectral curve of integrable system, and spectral curve means that curve which we used in this case. So, spectral curve of integrable system means spectral curve means that this thing, it it's equal to some p of lambda and mu, which is sum over lambda to I mu to j, ihaj, which depend on cluster variables. And these Hamiltonians are in involution. And cluster variables, x, which I call x, they are discrete fluxes of this U1 monodromy on this graph. So like in this case, for example, x1, it's w2, w8, divided by w3, w5. And x1 is a variable corresponding to flux of monodromy around this phase. So you have a phase, and you can compute monodromy or flux of your U1 connection.
This is a relativistic total.
Yes. In this case, this is a relativistic total chain. Yes. Like and Hamiltonian in terms of cluster variables, a Hamiltonian is square root of x1 x4 plus 1 over square root x1 x4 plus square root of x1 x4 times x3 plus square root of x1 divided by x4, where x1, x2, x3, and x4 are four cluster variables. And like you can recognize that here you also have four terms, which are like e to the p, e to the minus p, e to the q, and z e to the minus q.
I have a silly question. Why you have twice? So the fact that you have two spectral parameters now is because you have space and time.
Actually, I had two spectral parameters even before. When I rolled down the spectral curve, like it depended on lambda and on z.
Okay, but z is what I did for spectral. Yeah.
Yes, they both sometimes. Yes, I understand. This can be confusing if you. I heard about integrable systems before, because in Lux representation, typically like your row of your parameter are different. So one parameter it corresponds to spectral parameter, and another it's some parameter on a base. But these integrable systems are different. These are the same integrable systems, but the way to get spectral curve and Hamiltonians is different, and it's symmetric in lambda and mu. So your like you have not distinguished role between lambda and mu, and this is like why I like them. Like, and I haven't seen this before, or in other integrable systems, and therefore like all kinds of spectral dualities in integrable systems they can be very easily proved in this context because like you do not have distinguished role spectral parameters. Yes.
But so for this integrable system, I think you can also use the standard.
Absolutely.
Now, I guess with this, you want to find a new integrable system or new theories.
Right. There is a dictionary. So, in fact, there are other supersymmetric theories which are corresponding to theories with matter or to Weaver gauge theories. And in five dimensions, to all known examples of like Saber-Witten theories for some supersymmetric gauge theories, you can find the corresponding cluster integrable system. And it's pretty simple thing. Yeah, and like maybe I can, like I have two more minutes maybe. I want to say like why I, so I explained cluster integrable systems to some extent, but I also had melting crystals in my title. And I want to like make a short remark on that. So from some perspective, which I cannot explain now, unfortunately. It's natural. Like it's natural to demand from your variables, to have non-zero flux. So you want this to be not equal to one. But if you have some discrete connection on a torus. You cannot have non-zero total flux through the torus if this is a trivial connection. Because if you go if you compute monodromy of U1 connection around this plaquette, around that plaquette, and around all plaquettes, and you multiply all these flux, you will cancel, you will go along each edge twice, one in one direction and once in another direction. And you will have zero magnetic flux. Or if you're familiar with condensed matter systems, like if you want to have like if you want to have a non-trivial magnetic flux on your lattice system, you cannot have it having some weights, just periodic weighting on edges of your graph, which encodes interaction. So if you want to have this to be equal to some Q, which plays important role in this story, you need to uplift your model on a plane if you want to have non-trivial flux. And you have to introduce, instead of just translation operators, Tx and Ty, you need to get some magnetic translation operators. So this means that you have to replace this lambda and mu, which we're computing here, with some non-commutative parameters. So to have Q, you have like to promote lambda and mu, some translation operators Tx and Ty on a lattice, on a plane, and these Tx and Ty are Q commuting magnetic translations. And now, instead of computation of determinant of just Castellan operator, which depends on two commuting spectral parameters, lambda and mu, now you have a question, what you have to compute? And the answer is yes, indeed, like you have to compute determinant of some operator depending on non-commutative variables Tx and Ty. So we want to compute determinant of K of Tx and Ty, which corresponds to magnetic translation, which are non-commutative. It's not an easy task to compute determinant of some non-commutative operator, but at least you can do this in a limit Q to 1, which is called melting crystals limit. And maybe this is the time for pictures. I don't know how to do that. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, so, so now you have like not graph on a plane, but you have a graph on, like, not a graph on a torus, but graph on a plane. And like you can, each term in a representation of determinant of this Castellan operator, so if you compute determinant, you would have some over terms, some monomials in the weights of edges. And these monomials are corresponding to dimer configurations. Dimer configurations are just configurations of edges on the graph, such configurations that at each vertex you have only one adjacent edge. So this is an example of one configuration. And there are other configurations which are not too much different from those configurations not too much different from this configuration. And there are some modifications. So in fact, how do you obtain these other configurations which are not too much different? You can just take some number of faces, and it's important that along these faces you need your edges to be inside of dimer configurations and outside of dimer configuration to be alternating. So you have blank edge, then edge with dimers, then edge without dimers, then edge with dimer, and so on and so forth. And you obtain another configuration by exchanging those edges which do have dimer and those which do not have dimer. And the weight of that contribution to computation of determinant, it would be different by Q. And in this case, like in this particular case, it will be equal by Q, which is equal to product of weights of the faces inside of this shape. And you also have like other like examples like this. So also you have dimer configurations which are different by shifts along this boundary of this number of faces, and there is another weight. So there are other examples, for examples like that. And the claim which I checked is that this partition function of these like configurations of dimers can be shown to be equal to a partition function of topological string on like on some corresponding Calabi-Yau manifold, which is known from those melting crystal signs. So basically, and I explained that in details in my talk like months ago here on mathematical physics seminar, that like partition function of dimers is equal to partition function of 1, 2, and 3 dimensional boxes, which is known to be like partition function of topological strings from topological vertex technique. And like you can go to limit when this Q parameter it goes to 1, and in this limit, like this determinant of Castellan operator, it can be computed using WKB approximation, and it's equal to F divided e to the minus F divided by epsilon square, where Q is equal to e to the minus epsilon, epsilon goes to 0. And this F can be shown to be Seeberg-Witten prepotential of the corresponding 5D theory, which shows that this correspondence works. So basically, this F, it satisfies Seeberg-Witten equation, A dF over dA is equal to A duo. So this is like another check of the correspondence. One check is that you have indeed melting crystals combinatoric, and another check is that in a melting limit, when Q goes to 1, you have you get like some new formula for Seeberg-Witten prepotential of the theory. Yeah, maybe that's it. Sorry for being too long.
Thank you.
Excuse me. This Q equals to 0 limits corresponds to certain limits of Nekrasov partition function.
Yes, this is the limit. In terms of Nekrasov parameters, this epsilon is basically Nekrasov background, like background parameters, omega background parameters epsilon, and this function, like this partition function of topological strings, it's equal to 5D Nekrasov functions. Instantonic Nekrasov function. And in this limit, like this is an old story, like from Nekrasov-Akunkov paper, that when you go to epsilon to zero limit from your partition, from your Nekrasov partition function, you are getting like your prepotential in this way.
Let's pick on the beginning. I guess you can also introduce hypermultiplet into the game, right?
So yes.
You can, yeah.
Yes. Yes. It's possible. It just, for example, I didn't introduce necessary combinatorics, but like for your theory without matter multiplets, the corresponding system is relativistic TODA. For theory with matter, your system is XXZ classical spin chain, so-called. So there is a corresponding integrable spin chain, and you have also like cluster description for that theory as well. Yes.
Basically, all the integral systems seems to form into this.
Right. In case if your integrable system of so-called relativistic type, so if your dependence on canonical coordinates and momenta is exponential, or they're also called trigonometric integrable systems. So integrable systems with trigonometric R matrix. In that case, yes, you can expect these systems to have some cluster nature, right?
Okay.
But not all. Like,
okay. Therefore, like for example, for the elliptic, it is not known what.
Yeah, this is a good question. So, this is what I'm thinking about now. Can we extend this? Like, are there some cluster properties for elliptic integrable systems? And it's most natural to expect from double elliptic integrable systems to be like of cluster type. So, those system which has both elliptic dependence on coordinate and on momenta. And there are some evidences that it might happen. For example, spectral curve of those systems can be also rewritten in a symmetric way where lambda and mu like both have the same, so like go in the same way inside of spectral curve. But this is not known.
The rational case, the rational case, wouldn't your quiver picture be just one line from X to B something like this.
Yeah, so there is some relation to rational, also to rational case, and to 4D integral systems. And this is more like about papers of Gajota, Moore, and Netzke, where they used like cluster algebraic description of the moduli space of flat connections for 4D gauge theories and for rational integrable systems. But this is a little bit different story, and it's not obvious how these two stories are related by, but indeed in both cases you have some cluster structure. Yes.
Okay, any further questions?